Okay, first item on the agenda is approval of agenda.
I move second.
First and a second, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Item, public matters not on the agenda. Anyone wishing to come forward to make comments, please do so now.
Hi, I'm Tony Vicini with Vicini Brothers. I want to come up here and kind of update you on where we are on, we were getting a grant for a grinder that to replace the one that the CARB said we can no longer use because of the emissions. It's not Tier 4. At that point in time, Jared, who was running the grant program, had told us to go ahead and sell the grinder that we had, as we were pretty much almost just waiting for funding on the grant to pay for the new machine. And, since then, there's been a few different hurdles, and as Jared's gone, and now the new guy there says that since we don't have the old machine anymore to knock a hole in the block and kill it, we're no longer eligible for the grant. So we're kind of scrambling at this point. We had borrowed money from the Air Board to go ahead and get this newer machine that was available at the time, which if we hadn't done so right away, would have gone away, the opportunity for the machine, which was the right price at the right time. So we might have to meet with you, scheduled or whatnot, to figure out another way to take care of the monies or push it back or something on repayment, because things did not go at all as planned.
Question on that.
Absolutely.
Have you asked the guy at the Air Board, could you buy an older machine of some sort and knock a hole in a block?
No, we haven't done that. I mean, that's all probably available. But I think that was the process was on the old one. But no, I hadn't thought about buying another machine just to knock a hole in the block.
Find one out there out in the grass somewhere that somebody has. Hey, we'll buy your machine and we'll see if that was. So what happened to, writing that was satisfying before I bought it.
Yeah.
What happened to your old machine?
Pardon?
What happened to the old machine?
It was we sold out of state.
That wasn't part of. Grant.
Well, the grant process at that point, but Jared that was taking care of it said to go ahead and sell the machine. That way we'd have the funding to, because we have to get a loan on the new one that would be repaid when we got the grant. And so we've been making payments on this loan. and along with the down payment we had to do on the loan to make it so we could have work it out and had enough finances to.
But at the time, did the grant allow you to do that, or were the,
yeah, it was that was how it was all going to work out.
Now the new grant says.
And it didn't work out that way, and for whatever reason, the round one they gave it to somebody else, even though he said that we had it, and it's just been kind of going downhill from there. And like I said, now there's a new person in there. And his first thing is, okay, well, where's the other machine? It's like, well, the previous guy told us to go ahead and sell it. And that's, you know, kind of where we are now.
Where was this previous guy at?
At the Air Resources or the.
Have any documentation for that?
That's the question.
Oh.
That he said you can go ahead and sell it?
I know Jim was kind of handling it, so I'm not sure on the paperwork on that.
Wasn't selling the piece of equipment out of state one of the options? I've heard that as one of the options.
Yeah, that was one of the options. Get it out of California, pretty much, so it's no longer having emissions here.
Well, you kind of hit a perfect storm with timing-wise. I can tell you, as far as myself, I hope the other board members feel this way, that we'll work with you to try and find some options here that are receptive to everybody.
Like I say, we aren't, you know, completely against the wall yet. We're getting there, but I felt it prudent to come up and let you know where we are on this. Of course, you all are more than welcome to come out and take a look at the site if you ever want to.
Do you have an option to get another piece of equipment?
We have the other piece of equipment that meets all the regulations. But it's just the finance part of it.
But you got the other piece of equipment, but you didn't get a grant, so.
No, but we got a loan, but the payments on the loan are above what we're bringing in per month. It's going to be for $200,000. Yeah. But we're trying a few different things. Still working on it, but we're at on it.
Is that a state or a federal grant?
State.
Must be something we can do to put some pressure on them.
Car, maybe. I don't know. It's a pretty tough road to hoe.
I'm going to talk to that guy at the Air Board. You might as well go down to the Sacramento Zoo and talk to a monkey.
It's an odd sort of thing. We've all seen the cracks. I mean, it's a thing like, okay, if we didn't have a business already, they'd give us the money. But since we're already existing, they can't help us out on it, even though they told us we couldn't use the machine anymore.
Well, I mean, was that grant, was it predicated on that specific unit that you had in your possession at that time?
I believe that it was.
You know, could you ask for maybe just talk to him? And I mean, you don't want to get in a food fight with him, but could you maybe ask? Could he talk to his boss and see if you got some other type of machine? Could you mothball that one to meet the criteria?
Yeah, we could check into that. I believe
there's probably some old, worn out machines out there that a person.
Oh, I'm sure I could find one that's already burnt down or something.
Yeah. Public matters. We're probably going a little bit beyond public matters.
Correct.
That's true.
So we can either discuss this at a future meeting.
Okay. Okay, then we'll work on getting it on the agenda then and move on from there.
Ad hoc committee to try and work on it. Somewhat time sensitive too, isn't it?
Okay. Well, anyway, I thank you for your time. And
okay. All right. Anyone else?
Did you get that? Directors, Forrester, and crew.
Okay, next item on the agenda, administrative matters. Approval of minutes.
I'll move to approve.
Second.
I'll second.
I guess I was first.
I didn't see any corrections, so.
I have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
I have abstained because I wasn't here.
Mr. Chairman, I'll abstain as well as I missed that meeting.
Okay. So noted. All right. Number two on administrative matters, Fector and Company Air District presentation.
Good afternoon. Jim McCargue, Air Pollution Control Officer. This is the Fector and Company Air District 2017-2018 audit. The outside independent auditing firm, Fector & Company CPA, Inc., performed the two-year audit for the period 2017-2018. Included in your agenda packet are the financial statements and the management report. Representatives from Fector & Company will provide an overview of the audit procedure, findings, and recommendations. And since I know Director Peters has to go somewhere today, I'm going to try and keep the meeting moving along, so I'll bring Mr. Craig Fector up here now.
Comment on the monkey at the Air Resources Board. I was just back there. I thought it was funny. My business partner's name is Scott German. He's a firm administrator. He does our tech function, our review function. He used to work for a company that had to deal with the placer. they had to buy a bunch of new machinery or whatever, and so it was going to cost like $500,000, which was not an insignificant sum. And the answer he got from their officer there was he had to charge more just to cost. And he was kind of like, well, I can't raise my costs enough to get $500,000 worth of equipment. But
they don't care.
Yeah, they don't care. Yeah, it's problematic, difficult at times. Thanks for having me back. I do recognize quite a few of you. I think for the last 2 year audit, I didn't do the presentation. It was Sandy who managed the audit. But I've been officially, our firm's been doing officially the audit for like 17 years. Like, so we did our first audit in 2005, and that covered a 4 or 5 year period, and we're back. We tried to rotate the last time around, but couldn't find another bidder, so you guys had us back again. I really do appreciate that. So before I get into the audit report itself, did you guys have any questions in regards to your financial statements or audit? Okay, so I wish I had earth-shattering news for you. The district's budgetary size has grown. I think back to 10 years ago or 15 years ago when it was much smaller budgetary-wise. But budget size has grown. Your expenses have grown with revenues. And overall, you report small operating losses for each of the past two fiscal years. So I'd like to cover each of the major portions of the audit. We do rely on the county of Amador for a fairly significant portion of the audit. I want to go through that. I'd like to also review your cash basis balance sheet and income statement as well, so you kind of get how much your resources were as of the end of each fiscal year and what your net income was for each year as well. Again, there's no reason to be alarmed at your financial condition. I think overall you are in very good financial shape. I don't have any specific recommendations to bring before the board. So pages 1 and 2 of the report is the report itself, and couple pages to say that we believe the attached financial statements are fairly presented in accordance with GAAP, generally accepted accounting principles. So again, we don't take your numbers at face value. We do go conduct procedures to verify accuracy, but again, based on our procedures, we believe the attached numbers are fairly presented in accordance with GAAP. Page three is probably the most significant portion that we rely on an outside party to help us out with. So again, the employees of the district are not, you don't have separate employees. Employees of the district are employees of the County of Amador. Because of that, you don't have a separate PERS retirement plan. You have, you're combined with the County of Amador administrative pool. So when GASB 68, which is the pension standard, was released, I'm sure you guys have heard all about that over the past 5 years or so. One concern for a district of this type was just that, how do we determine what exactly is the air district's administrative component? So the County of Amador actually provides those calculations for us. They prepare, they have an overall, all their administrative employees, they carve out Amador Air District's employees to give us what your portion is of the net pension liability. And so what you see on page 3, net pension liability as of the end of the 18th fiscal year of $315,000. As of the end of the 17 fiscal year, that balance was $289,000. And these are numbers that we take from the county, and we rely on them to produce the calculation. And that's really the extent of our procedures. For other districts that have standalone plans, we do more. But for here, we just kind of rely on the County of Amador for those calculations. Let's take a look at that. Are there any questions on that?
You do say in our report, not your report, but in our agenda report, following audit adjustments could have a significant effect on districts' financial reporting processes, and one of those is the liabilities, and I agree with you. We're worried about that at the county level, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's so at the county level, any governmental agency in California should be nervous. It's not like a 10-year nervousness. It's not like, are we worried about PERS making payroll in 2 weeks or whatever? It's more of a long-term structural deficit that they have. Like there's a bunch of pension plans back east that are having problems, or in Chicago or Illinois having problems where they're only 25% funded. Those pension plans are in legitimate, can we pay our bills for the next 5 years type of distress. PERS is funded anywhere between 70-80%. I guess depending on the discount rate you want to use, it could be as low as like 60%. So it's really like there's no immediate cause for concern as far as keeping the retirees paid. But on a long-term basis, there is concern about whether or not PERS is properly, and whether or not that discount rate should be lower and caused to be there more or higher contributions currently. So that's a very big topic at the county here. But I have the same exact concerns.
Sounds like it is going to be lower at some point.
Yeah, they have lowered the discount rate, but the question is that even enough?
Oh, no. I was glad to see GASB 45 done. It didn't do us any favors. It did long term, but, I mean, it makes life a little harder.
Yeah.
But I think it makes people kind of realize face the facts.
Yeah, so I think some of the history behind it is interesting by itself. You know, from 1977 to 2001, PERS realized anywhere between 10 to 11% per year, so they got real fat and happy. Government went out and retroactively changed the pension plans, which caused the liabilities to meet what the assets were at that level when they were had a discount rate of 8.5% to 9%. Well, from 2001 until now, the market's returned about 3% to 4%. So you have almost this 20-year stretch of pension expectations not coming close to what the reality
is. I don't say the market has returned. Maybe the market investments have returned. The market's probably done better than that by a lot. But Richard beats this all the time as far as we started doing social engineering investing at CalPERS with the pension dollars.
Yeah.
Big mistake.
Yeah. So overall, you have 20 years worth of these expectations of making 7, 8, 9%, and the actual realized returns have been between 3 and 5. So have this kind of the structural pension deficit. So if they went back and – so the right thing to do would have been to not retroactively increase pension plans and to continue to make – and then assume a lower discount rate back in 2001, right? But that didn't happen.
And make prudent investments and not do social engineering with the taxpayers' dollars.
I don't disagree. So that's a different conversation, different day. We do offer a presentation to all of our clients in regards to GASB 68 if you guys have interest. We kind of just give our – it's more opinion as opposed to fact-based. We talk about the history of PERS, the returns, and like a future prognosis. So if the board has interest, I'm happy to come up and do that, and that's free of charge for anyone. 5 minutes long, and again, just let us know if – that could be its own separate conversation. So financially, if you take a look at page 8, this is – if I were on the board, there would be two pages I want to know – understand the most. And that's on page 6, page 8. Page 6 is our general fund balance sheet. That shows your immediate assets, your immediate liabilities, and what your reserves are as of the end of the year. Page 8 is our income statement. It shows your revenues for each of the periods, your expenses for each of the periods, and what your net change in fund balance was 1 year to the next, or what your net income was. You see on page 6 is your total assets as of the end of the 18 fiscal year were $810,000. Liabilities for accrued expenses as of the end of the year, but balances end of that fiscal year were $671,000. So the Air District is relatively unique in that you guys could fully fund your pension liability right now today, and it wouldn't really impact your operation. I'm sure that's not quite the same at the county level. It would be my the other way to compare your reserves is to match up your reserves against your budgetary size. Like, how are we doing? If we had to go out and buy stuff or fund different projects, can we do it? So, again, your reserves as of the end of the 18 fiscal year were $671,000, stacked up against an operating budget, which you see on page 8. Your total expenses were $488,000. So, in essence, the Air District had enough reserves to fund operations for a period of 15 months. So for any governmental agency, that's a very strong financial position to be in spite of your pension liability. Again, we don't accept these figures at face value. We confirm cash with the county, so we make sure that the reports they provide us agree to the county auditor reports, testing of disbursements every year, credit card payments to verify you guys are following your internal processes. You know, we stack up your financials over a 5-year period, attempt to identify any major inconsistencies or variants, require explanations for major, you know, for major events, and have nothing serious or important. The management report that Richard was referencing, we do have to disclose adjustments that we made. I'd hate to bifurcate it, you know, adjustments we make, because technically these are your financials. So when we prepare financial statements, it is non-audit service. There are some like mid-sized agencies or entities that will hire their own CPAs to prepare the financials that their auditors will then audit. The problem is for Amador Air, you don't want to pay a CPA $2,000 to prepare the financial statements that we're going to go, you know, audit. So we do that, perform that service as part of the audit. So we do a bunch of adjustments to get that to work. And so those are the reasons that we're disclosing those adjustments in the management letter, because it's an audit service, and it doesn't render us, we're still technically independent, but we have to disclose the fact that we made those adjustments. Those adjustments are not, again, if I had to bifurcate my adjustments between what's a big deal and what's not, those are not a big deal. Like, there's no correction required. Found that there were bank accounts that didn't reconcile, that'd be a big deal. Major cutoff entries that did not posted, that'd be a big deal. If we, agencies where there were postings of fund balance, where they threw off income by a couple $100,000, to where the reports you get on a monthly basis, to look at your finances were way off, that's a big deal. But these adjustments we made were just kind of part of the audit service that I wouldn't have any concern over. Questions on the financial statements? I'd like to thank your staff. They were responsive. They gave us what we needed in a timely manner. We're happy to get this out for you again. So,
thank you.
Yeah. Let me know on the pension presentation. It is interesting to me to put together and do, so if you guys have any interest. Okay. Thank you all. Have a great afternoon.
Oh, you need approval of this?
Yes.
Yeah. I'd make a motion to approve the Fechter & Company audit for 2017 and years 2018.
Second.
Motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Item, draft budget for fiscal year 2019-20.
Okay. And we have a draft budget and got a budget memo in the agenda item. And this kind of piggybacks right on the last agenda item with the audit. I've got what I'm calling an Air District budget overview sheet, and it shows the account balance and the reserves and the projected operating cash that we're projecting at the end of the fiscal year, June 30th. And then the middle of that page shows the 2019-2020 draft budget with revenue at $715,500 and expenses at the same, $715,500. And then for the reserves, I wanted to show a little bit of a breakdown of that $561,988, showing a $55,000 draw from reserves, which actually is a total of $75,000 that I have in the budget. But what it's doing is it's taking $20,000 from what's assumed to be the leftover operating cash in our account balance and adding that to a $55,000 draw from reserves, which will then result in a total of $508,988 for the 1920 cash reserves as we go forward. And I've got a bar chart in a minute I'll get to. But the next page then is the revenue sheet. And I mentioned in the memo that generally speaking, the revenues are stable and consistent with previous years. Expenses are also stable and consistent with previous years. Some of the variable costs that I want to focus on are the budget lines 54120 community project $75,000 and budget line 54712 special projects also $75,000. So again, flipping to the revenue page, I list the revenue that we're anticipating coming in. And, again, that's a subtotal of $640,500 with an additional $75,000 making for a grand total of $715,500 in projected revenue for the 1920 year. And then on the expenses side of things, I have a couple comment boxes where I call out some of the changes that I just wanted to comment on real quickly. And there's one for communications, and there's an increase in AT&T costs for the telephone lines. So there's been a $1,500 increase there. For office expenses, there's a $1,500 increase there, and that's for replacing two staff computers at $1,144 each. And then for professional and specialized services, I've added $28,000 for a grand total of $128,233 to reflect the actual cost that we have seen in professional and specialized services. And then we get to the two lines that I wanted to discuss a little bit. And again, 54120 community projects, $75,000. $25,000 of that I have for the Pine Needle program, and then $50,000 is the electric vehicle program that we discussed at the last meeting. And then the next line is 54712 special projects. And in this line, again, $75,000, I have $25,000 for the City County Agency diesel engine program. I have $25,000 for a wood stove program, kind of as a placeholder. We don't have a program set for this coming year, but I'm assuming that there will probably be a need for a wood stove program. And then the last one is $25,000 for electric vehicle charging stations, and that is a previously approved program. And then the last comment box I have is $200,000 in a RAP grant, which is the Rural Assistance Program. That's a grant that we normally direct to CAPCOA, but they had a problem, couldn't expend the money, so they've directed it back to us. So we will be looking at a project to utilize that $200,000 in the next fiscal year. And one of the projects that's been suggested is a electric school bus. I don't know if that's going to work or if that's going to go, but that's, again, this is a CAPCOA grant that normally they operate, and they've asked us to take the money back and then work with them to see that money go to a project.
That's about how much Vicini's need, isn't it?
What I was thinking. We got a project.
Well, if you thought the farmer grant that they didn't get was problematic, this would be 10 times more difficult.
Back to the zoo.
Yeah. So then the last page is my cash reserves blue bar chart. And again, the last one on the right side shows $506,988. And the general trend of that, if you see from the left side moving right, we were going straight up. And then what my direction has been from this board of directors is to try and very carefully and gradually chip away at that cash reserves to prevent it from continuing to grow excessively. And I think if you look at that line, you see that we've somewhat flattened off at about $500,000 in the cash reserve. So just in a kind of general summation, I think this bar chart shows that we are, in fact, having some success at preventing the continued accumulation of cash into reserves.
What was the target that we kind of set? Was it 400 or 500?
I have to look it up. I think it was, I think we said 50% of the operating budget. So if you would, yeah, 350,000, probably 400,000, something like that.
That will change from year to year, because I'm assuming.
Well, budget will change from year to year, but on average, we looked at an average operating budget. We said, okay, generally speaking, we would like to maintain cash reserves at least 50% of operating budget. And if necessary, we could have Craig Fechter speak to what is the best idea with respect to that. But I think with what we looked at, that's what we decided.
I think, Jim, the whole point isn't to necessarily, as a goal, prevent the accumulation of reserves. The whole idea was to put money back into the community, and I think
That's right.
That's the way to look at this. We're not successfully trimming our reserves at 500 grand. We're successfully putting more money back into the community while maintaining a responsible reserve position.
That's correct. That's a better way.
That's the press release.
That's a better way to describe it.
Then what's the story on the employee group insurance on your expenses? That's the actual difference percentage?
Let's see. The group insurance. Oh, the $15,000. Yeah, Herminia, that was the... we discussed that. Do you remember that number?
It isn't so much the magnitude of the number, it's the difference from prior years that caught my eye.
Yeah, over 7,000% difference.
Well, essentially, it wasn't budgeted for in the prior year, and now...
I think that's because a staff member decided to draw insurance. Health insurance. Can you speak to the mic?
So we think it's the one of us decided to take the county health insurance plan.
Okay.
Whereas they were waiving health insurance.
Jim?
What's that? That's correct.
Prices, not more. Jim, the $128,000 in professional and specialized services?
Yes.
Or what will that?
Majority of it will be my salary costs. My costs are, let's see, we get invoiced by Waste Management Department because I'm paid through County Waste Management Recycling Department. So then we get invoiced and we pay for my costs. So the majority of that, and then outside of that, additional professional specialized services. We had Ray Kapai's costs in there, and I'm not sure what other costs we had in there, but the bulk of it by far is my costs.
Wouldn't it make more sense, just from an organizational standpoint, to have your cost, your salary costs included, grouped with the other salaries and wages? And I realize that they're not perhaps loaded at the same in the same fashion, but it would seem from an organizational perspective, it really doesn't fall into the same category as Ray Kapai.
Yeah, you know, we had this discussion because I think I brought up the very same thing years ago. I was like, well, why is my cost coming out of there? And I know we went into that discussion, but I think it's because technically speaking, I'm considered a contract, and so I'm paid for out of professional and specialized services. I'm not considered a regular Air District employee. I think that's why it is, Robin. But I agree.
Perhaps separating that into a separate line item might make some sense.
Okay. We'll make a note of that.
Entertain a motion on approval of 19-20.
So moved.
And to set the hearing for August 20th, public hearing.
I'll second.
Motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Item 19-04 for SB 1260, prescribed burning funding.
Yeah, and this is a grant that was presented to us. SB 1260 provides funding to local air districts to enhance air quality and smoke monitoring and to provide a public awareness campaign regarding prescribed burns. This program may include, but not limited to, purchasing new rapidly deployable air quality monitors. And you've got the signed grant agreement and the grant
provisions and exhibit in here. And then the last page is the resolution that is required. I was, because of the tight timeline on this, I was asked to sign the grant agreement and then come back and request the resolution from the authorizing board. That's why we're here today. And so we'll look at implementing this program over the next fiscal year.
Questions?
I understand. How do you even know where to place the equipment around a prescribed burn, because the prevailing wind could come up and blow the smoke the other way and not even give you a good read?
Well, what we would want to do is if there's a burn area and we think there's a sensitive receptor in one direction, say there's a school or something, and we think there could be potential for it to go that direction, we would set it up there where we could get information that would then help us determine what the smoke impacts would be to that particular, and it could be a community, a neighborhood, a retirement home, whatever. That's how we would decide to put it.
But it has to be a prescribed burn. You're not talking about just neighborhood burning of leaves or things like that, pine needles.
10 acres and larger, I think, wasn't it?
This is prescribed burning program. So, and this actually has to do with the state's emphasis on utilizing prescribed burning and forest treatment in preparation to prevent these catastrophic wildfires that we've seen in the past. So we'll just look for a resolution on that.
Entertain a motion. Open up for public comment, but I don't think there's anybody.
No. I'd make a motion to approve the resolution.
I'll second.
Have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Item under administrative matters, electric vehicle charging stations.
Okay, and this was discussed at the March 18, 2019 meeting of the Air District Board of Directors. And staff was directed to work with Mr. Bramwell on siting a dual Tesla and Clipper Creek electric charging station on his commercial property in Buckhorn. Since the March meeting, Mr. Bramwell has moved forward with his plans to install an electric vehicle charging station. However, he has opted to install two Tesla chargers and no Clipper Creek charger. And Mr. Bramwell was asking if the Air District will assist him with the cost to provide electric service to the two Tesla chargers, with the possible or potential option of adding a Clipper Creek charger at some time in the future. And so I brought this back because the discussion was last time is that we were going to have, Mr. Bramwell was going to have a pedestal and he was going to have a Tesla and a traditional, I say Clipper Creek. I don't know if it's got to be a Clipper Creek, but it's a more traditional, not a Tesla charger. And he kind of went a different direction. So I wanted to make sure we understood what he was doing and that if we were going to contribute monies to this installation, that we were aware of it. And we do have a representative from Tesla here, if necessary, to speak to his program. So I wanted to see if the board of directors is supportive of moving forward with funding the cost.
So again, remind us what we agreed with.
We
Mr.
discussed a pedestal with Tesla and Clipper Creek. So it would be a charger that charges Tesla vehicles and then a charger that charges the other vehicles. Since then, Mr. Bramwell decided to go with two Teslas on his property and no Clipper Creek.
And he wants us to charge us the electricity? Is that?
But no, the cost to bring electricity to it, because he's incurring significant amount of construction costs and infrastructure costs to bring power to this Tesla charging station. And so he would like to see, we were offering up to, I think, $5,000 for the cost of installing a dual pedestal station. And he's asking if we'll still provide that funding for the infrastructure, but in this case, with two Teslas.
Now, the Tesla stations, I thought I understood that Tesla paid for them to go in. Is that true or not?
They did at one time, and I can let you speak to it, but at one time they did pay. But now what they're doing is paying, they're providing the chargers, and it's up to the property owner to pay for the installation.
You know how much that cost is going to be to him?
I believe the cost is around $5,000 from what I understand.
So he'll provide receipts to us to verify that.
Yeah.
So in addition to the $5,000 to go for the charging stations, which now looks like two Teslas, he wants also additional funds for the bringing the power?
No, it's just the one $5,000 he's asking for.
But he wants, then he wants to be able to use that to bring power, or?
He wants the Air District to help him with the $5,000 to bring power to his two Tesla chargers.
Okay, and is he going to buy the Tesla chargers then, or?
Tesla has provided them to him
at
no charge.
So he just kind of wants to modify the contract a little bit, or?
He wants to modify it in the sense that what we agreed to was Tesla and Clipper Creek or whatever. Clipper Creek type, but he's going with two Tesla.
What if you own a Prius and you want to get...
Are you able to speak to that?
Could we appeal to Elon Musk to pay for everything? The innovative request?
He launches rockets from there. No.
I don't agree with that at all.
It wasn't our program to try and support more than just Tesla vehicles.
Yeah.
Well, our discussion at the last meeting was clearly to provide upcountry charging opportunity for both Tesla and the more traditional charging. And things, went a different direction, and that's why I decided to bring this back. I think that there's potential, has been communicated to me, that there could be a third added to this, a Clipper Creek, in the future. I don't know. That's just something Mr. Bramall has offered.
Installed it?
Why couldn't we keep it at what it was, Clipper Creek and a Tesla, and then maybe add another Tesla?
Yeah, to me it looks a little bit elitist.
Well, if you start changing,
for lack of a better
term, pattern, you're going to... The next guy is going to want something different.
Well, I think that's why we're here, is because we did definitely talk about it in one way. And as far as why he's gone with the two Tesla chargers, I think he's got some reasoning behind his power demands and utilization and how it was going to work. And for some reason, the two Tesla units to him made the most sense. But that's not what we discussed.
Well, that's because two Teslas are free and the others might not be. But why don't we give him the $2,500? Why don't we just give him $2,500 and tell him we'll give him the other $2,500 when he puts in the other unit?
I'd tell him to reapply when he wants to follow the rules.
I don't...
What's that?
How much does getting his power over there is going to cost?
From what I understand, around $5,000 to have him have a contractor.
I don't care what he puts in. I think if he puts in anything that it does good for the environment, and you know what, maybe he's looking at a lot of the Tesla stations on the Shenandoah Valley, and there's probably no other charging stations with some of those, so maybe he's going to get more customers from Tesla going up to gamble in Lake Tahoe.
Well, I think Tesla previously was providing a Tesla and Clipper Creek together, weren't they, in the past? No?
I thought the Shenandoah Valley stations were booked.
Taste Restaurant did do the destination charging through Tesla. Tesla gave Test Restaurant one Tesla charger, one Clipper Creek charger. I think that was repeated in the county also. The problem with Mr. Bramble's issue is that the power that the Tesla demands is higher than the Clipper Creek. So he has to run higher voltage to support the infrastructure for the two Teslas, which he gets for free. But he has to operate the two Teslas, so he's kind of stuck there. He wants to run a Clipper Creek if he can, but then there's more power demand. So the Teslas, let's say they need 80 amp service. Clipper Creek, let's say, needs 40. So he's running out of options in his main panel. So that's, he wants to satisfy Tesla, and he wants a Clipper Creek too. You know, he just, right now it's just not working out. And I'm not an electrician. I don't know this stuff that well, but it's just a little bit difficult for him to do all three of them right now because of the changes that he's going to have to do to his main panel. Now that Matt was speaking, thank you, Matt, by the way. Matt reminded me that Mr. Bramble mentioned that Tesla would not put his location on their map unless he took two chargers.
So there's good business reasoning why he has to put in two, and I'd support it because of that.
And out in front of there, see how many Teslas go by in a day compared to Prius and Volts. And what an elitist thing. I like Teslas, don't get me wrong.
But I'm pretty sure that the ratio of Teslas compared to all the other electric.
So Teslas are by far the more predominant electric vehicle? The other way around.
I'm going to make a motion that we give Mr. Bramble the $5,000 to put in the, with documentation that receipts to put in the two Tesla charging stations and the power to get there.
I'll give it a second.
Motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Got a plan. We got a plan.
What's that? It seems like what we want to do is subsidize electric vehicles, but not subsidize Tesla necessarily. And that's what this kind of feels like to me. That, you know, if he came back to us later and said, okay, now I've installed the other one, I'd be all for giving him the whole $5,000 at a later date after he did it, but not on a promise that I'd like to put in another one. But.
Well, he gets two stations in, and I think he would seriously look at putting in a third once he figures out if it economically he can make it happen.
Well, if he wants to do that, what about a motion of giving him half of the money, half of the $5,000? Let's put in the two Teslas. I mean, that way we're.
I think we are.
Okay, never mind.
Would a letter to Tesla help or probably not, huh?
A letter from Tesla or a letter to Tesla?
I want to call Mr. Musk and talk to him.
Ah.
Good luck.
Do we have sufficient funds in this charging station project that we're trying to do to fund $7,500?
$7,500 for this? For this project?
Yeah, could we say that we're funding $25 per station, whether they...
We're funding up to $5,000 per station. That's what we agreed to previously.
Yeah, but for two units. What I'm saying, could we fund $7,500 for three units?
Oh, I don't...
Make a motion, we'll find out.
Yeah, but don't you only have a certain budget for all of this, or?
Yeah, we have a set budget. So right now we're set at 5,000 per project, maximum.
How many projects can you do within?
We're going to try and do, well, we've got the Amador City one coming online. We've got Sutter Creek, and then we've got Ione, and then potentially this upcountry. So there's
four.
There's four.
A set with five in mind with a budget of $25,000, right?
Right. Yeah.
I didn't have Mr. Drummel come and talk to us.
Okay, I can have him come to the next meeting. I will ask Mr. Bramwell to come.
Okay, next item on the agenda, APCO's update.
APCO update, and I can run through this pretty quickly. The first one is the smoke reduction bin program, the pine needle bin, and you've got a copy of the flyer. As you recall, the last meeting, we changed the pine needle bin program. We took out the public unattended bins at Mace Meadows, at Pine Acres, and at Lockwood. And direction to staff was to work with ACES to come up with some sort of option or alternative. And we ended up with coming up with a pine needle disposal day, which will occur June 15th. And that'll be at ACES in Pine Grove. And we'll accept at no charge from folks, and there's some limitations.
The question I have is, I'm going to be advertising this, but that place is hard to deal with for normal Saturday traffic, you know, rolling up and down the hill. And I'm going to be telling everybody, hit it hard.
Mm-hmm.
And what are we going to do for traffic?
Well, I've worked with ACES, and they haven't had any concern as far as traffic. Now, if that's something that is going to be a problem, then we should probably look at that.
Talk to code enforcement and see what happens when we said, hey, we have a free cleanup day at Mace Meadows. And,
yeah,
you know, we had traffic, you know, 1,000 yards back. You know,
right.
If we're blocking 88, that's
right,
going to make the Highway Patrol awful upset.
I think you need to deal with that. You'll feel what it likes to be in Jackson Valley when the casino opened.
Yeah, that's what I'm going with, you know.
Yeah.
Ask Harris to come up and figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, that, you know, as far as accessibility and traffic stacking up, I will look into that, and I'll try and figure out what the best option is, but... yeah, if you think that it's going to be an issue, then I want to be out in front of it.
I highly suspect so.
Okay.
Because I've gotten a lot of calls on where the bins are, where are my bins.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
This is what's going to happen, June 15th, and
yeah,
this is what we're doing, and this is an experiment to see what
yeah
happens.
Yeah.
You're going to have bins out?
Well, we've got the neighborhood bins, but we do not have, at the last meeting, the board decided to remove the public bins. So we still have bins out in a few of the neighborhoods, and then also at Sutter Creek Fire Department. Yeah, I think they're – well, actually, we've got a list of them. How many was on our list?
For the neighborhood one, we have 5 people on our list.
5.
And so we're giving them 2 weeks each. So they're running, they started May 6th, that first Monday in May, and they'll run until the first weekend in July, so July 5th or 6th, that weekend. The neighborhood ones have been very appreciative of our service. I mean, we'll have a letter correspondence from Maggie that she just finished up her 2 weeks, and, I mean, they love them. They're we can't find more people that appreciate it than these people. And so we took out the 3 bins upcountry, so the Silver Drive one, the Mace Meadows, and the Lockwood Fire Station, and we still have the Sutter Creek bin at the fire station, which that one has been very popular as well.
These aren't open to the public, just the neighborhood?
These are primarily specific to neighborhoods. So now – let me clarify for you, Mr. Colburn. There's nothing to prevent people from the public going to use them, but primarily they're designed for a specific neighborhood.
Well, one of the neighborhoods I know keeps it locked up behind a gate.
Okay.
Amador Pines.
Okay, Amador Pines. Yeah. And we have a requirement that they do watch them carefully and make sure that they're not used and abused. That was the problem with our public bins. Sutter Creek is open to the public, and that's very carefully watched and managed. That's one of our best managed bins. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so that's the pine needle bins. The next one is the go ahead.
Just information. I wanted to tell you. We used to have a garbage clean, a citywide garbage cleanup.
Yeah.
And it was volunteers. And it was unbelievable the amount of stuff we got. We probably hauled 10 bins, big dump, the large bins, cases. They had trucks running there all day long, picking up bins and hauling them back. We had a problem where someone got hurt.
Oh.
Our insurance company shut us down. But that was a great service, and it added a lot to the cleanup of the city. Now, I understand that a rotary or somebody's doing that in Fiddletown and River Pines, but does that get any support from the Air District at all?
Not those particular programs, but we experienced something similar with these public bins that we discontinued. Someone actually got hurt, and there was some real concern about liability issues with those public bins.
Okay.
Okay, moving forward to the wildfire smoke impacts to health and messaging. This is a workshop I'm going to be conducting in conjunction with the public health department. And I just wanted to bring this up. I've kept this in my desk drawer since September 18th, 2015. And this is the Butte Fire, Ledger Dispatch newspaper right after the Butte Fire. Unfortunately, these fires, they're not going away. And what this is designed to do is to get us together, some of the key stakeholders. I've got someone from California Air Resources Board. I've got someone from US EPA coming in with some information. And then we're going to talk about some issues of local concern. The N95 face masks, they call them respirators. The air quality index versus particulate matter, threshold numbers for outdoor sporting events and for other outdoor events, clean air shelters and building filtration. These issues come up during a fire, and if we're not prepared for them, we're kind of left, you know, scrambling, trying to figure out what to do. So by accident almost, I had one of these workshops a couple months before Butte Fire, and we happened to be extremely well prepared for the Butte Fire, and so I thought that it would be smart to have this workshop. So that's that. The workshop? I'm putting the information out. I'm getting it out into the media, so I'll have that out. And then the next item is government net credit cards. And Herminia, do you want to talk just a second about that?
So we're gearing up to be on board with the credit card, accepting credit cards at our counter. I think that will be a big hit because people come up to our counter and they're ready to pay with their plastic. And it's a shock when I say, nope, check or cash only. We've gone through the training. We've ordered our new computer for the counter, and we should be getting our full kit for the credit card in a couple of weeks, and we're ready to go.
So that'll be an additional convenience to people coming up buying burn permits or paying for their permit to operate. As Herminia mentioned, we have had a lot of people, you know, be a little frustrated because they can't pay with their plastic. So this is something that's going on countywide here, and offering credit card payment throughout the county. And then the last, second to last item is the Purple Air monitoring system that we've got these small air monitors that we've been putting out. And I'm going to have Matt come up for just a second and give us a quick few words on the Purple Air monitors that he's gotten out.
All right. Just briefly, this is a Purple Air monitor. You might have saw an EBAM station one time about 4 or 5 years ago. They're gigantic. This has taken its place. They're all over the world now. All you have to do is go to purpleair.com, click on map, and you can find a monitor near you probably. I'm installing them right now. I put a couple down, one at Jackson Valley Irrigation and the other one at Castle Oaks. I'm going to try to get one in Volcano. I need electricity and constant Wi-Fi for this to operate. All it does is ping to Wi-Fi and reports what it measures. It has two small lasers in it. This is a PVC cap. You know, there's not much to them, but they're pretty sturdy. There is one upstairs on the balcony. It's been there for a while, and you can see it. It's in operation, too, and that's our Jackson reading, that one you see up there. So I'm going to try to put out as many of these as I can. If you guys have a specific place that you know that might accommodate it, let me know. And I'll see if I can get one there to, you know, talk to the internet, and we'll have a reading. It's cool stuff, you know. And the state provided these.
No charge.
Yeah, no charge.
Get VolcanoNet part of their Wi-Fi system. Can you get on that?
Actually, I went to VolcanoNet. I went to the office, and I'm trying to put one there up in Pine Grove specifically. It's kind of picky sometimes about how it hooks up to individual sites and addresses. So sometimes it works. Sometimes I'm shut out. It's like 50%. Volcano Telephone is trying to put – I think they're trying to install some up at Kirkwood for them.
Yeah, so. I'm seeing one at your fire station in Mace Meadows, and it's a 4 right now. So.
What?
The 4 right now.
Yeah, 4-0. It's pretty clean right now. So.
But, up in the – I'm thinking of Veterans Hall. You know, there's a Volcano connection there.
Okay.
But it's not a landline. I mean, it's a Wi-Fi.
Yeah. As long as it's Wi-Fi constant, guest Wi-Fi like we have here in this building works really good. Metal buildings, these don't like to work well. Anyway, Purple Air.
I think having more of those spread around would be better than having just one in Jackson.
Yeah, as Matt said, we have got those no charge from Air Resources Board, but people can buy those for $200, $250, and whereas as Matt said, the EBAMs that were doing this before, those are $20,000. So these have really changed the nature of monitoring air quality.
How does the general public access this?
purpleair.com, and they go on, and there's a map of the world, and they can zoom in to any place in the world and look at where each one of these are and what the number is, and what it's telling them is the particulate matter. So it's the PM reading. 2.5, Matt, is that what it is? 2.5 micron particulate matter, so... Yeah, some of the readings during wildfire season, when we get smoke coming here, we have readings in the 300, 400s, just terrible air quality. So what it's telling people is, you know, yeah, what you're seeing is bad. You know, take that into consideration. So that's Purple Air. Last thing is financials through May 15th, 2019. Those are included as usual. And then I passed out the card we got from Maggie for each one of you to look at. And then the next meeting will be, no meeting in June, so we'll meet on August 20th for our budget public hearing.
Okay, with that, meeting adjourned.
Thank you.